Leadership. Brother Butler, your experience in reference to leadership 2 years since was an experience for your own benefit, which was highly essential to you. You had very marked and decided views in regard to individual independence and right to private judgment. These views you carried to extremes. You reasoned that you must have the light and evidence for yourself in reference to your duty. I have been shown that no man's judgment should be surrendered to the judgment of any one man. But when the judgment of the General Conference, which is the highest authority God has upon the earth, is exercised, private independence and private judgment must not be maintained, but be surrendered. Your error was in persistently maintaining your private judgment of your duty against the voice of the highest authority the Lord has upon the earth. After you had taken your own time, and after the work had been much hindered by your delay, you came to Battle Creek in answer to the repeated and urgent calls of the General Conference. You firmly maintained, and not in the most respectful manner, that you had done right in following your own convictions of duty. You considered it a virtue in you to persistently maintain your position of independence. You did not seem to have a true sense of the power God had given to His church in the voice of the General Conference. You thought that, in responding to the call made to you by the General Conference, you were submitting to the judgment and mind of Brother White. You accordingly manifested an independence and a set, willful spirit, which was all wrong. God gave you a precious experience at that time, which was of value to you, and which has greatly increased your success as a minister of Christ. Your proud, unyielding will was subdued. You had a genuine conversion. This led to reflection and to your position upon leadership. Your principles in regard to leadership are right, but you do not make the right application of them. If you should let the power in the church, the voice and judgment of the General Conference, stand in the place you have given my husband, then there could be no fault found with your position. But you greatly err in giving to one man's mind and judgment that authority and influence which God has invested in His church in the judgment and voice of the General Conference. When this power which God has placed in the church is accredited to one man, when he is invested with the authority to be judgment for other minds, then the true Bible order is changed. Satan's efforts upon such a man's mind will be the most subtle and sometimes overpowering, because through this mind he thinks he can affect many others. Brother Butler's position on leadership is correct if he gives to the highest organized authority in the church what he has given to one man. God never designed that his work should bear the stamp of one man's mind and one man's judgment. The reason why Brothers Andrews and Wagoner are at this time deficient in the experience they should now have is because they have not been self-reliant. They have shunned responsibilities because in assuming them, their deficiencies would be brought to the light. They have been too willing to have my husband lead out and bear responsibilities, and have allowed him to be mind and judgment for them. These brethren are weak where they should be strong. They have not dared to follow their own independent judgment, lest they should make mistakes and be blamed for it. While they have stood ready to be tempted and to make my husband responsible if they thought they could see mistakes in his course. They have not lifted the burdens with him. They have referred continually to my husband, making him bear the responsibilities they should have shared with him, until these brethren are weak in those qualifications where they should be strong. They are weak in moral power when they might be giants, qualified to stand as pillars in the cause of God. These brethren have not that self-reliance or confidence that God will indeed lead them if they follow the light He has given them. God never intended that strong, independent men of superior intellect should live clinging to others like the ivy to the oak for support. All the difficulties, the backsets, the hardships and disappointments God's servants shall meet with in active labor will only strengthen them in the formation of a correct character. In putting their own energies of mind to use, the obstacles they will meet will prove to them positive blessings. They are gaining mental and spiritual muscle to be used upon important occasions with the very best results. They learn self-reliance and gain confidence in their own experience that God is really leading and guiding them. And as they meet peril and are obliged to meditate as they have real anguish of spirit, and feel the necessity of prayer in their effort to move understandingly and work to advantage in the cause of God, they find that conflict and perplexity call for the exercise of faith and trust in God, and firmness which develops power. Necessities are constantly arising for new ways and means to meet emergencies. Faculties are called into use that would lie dormant were it not for these pressing necessities in the work of God. This gives a varied experience, so that there will be no use for men of one idea and those who are only half developed. Men of might and power in this cause, whom God will use to His glory, are men who have been baffled and opposed and thwarted in their plans. These men might have turned their own failures to important victories, but instead of this, they have shunned the responsibilities which would make liability to mistakes possible. These precious brethren have failed to gain that education which is strengthened by experience, which reading and study and all the advantages otherwise gained will never give them. Brother Butler has had strength to bear some responsibilities. God has accepted his energetic labors and blessed his efforts. Brother Butler has made some mistakes, but because of some failures, he should in no wise misjudge his capabilities, nor distrust the strength that he may find in God. Brother Butler has not been a man willing and ready to assume responsibilities. He would naturally be inclined to shun them and to choose an easier position, to write and exercise the mind where no special vital interests are involved. He is making a mistake in relying upon my husband to tell him what to do. This is not the work God has given my husband. Brother Butler should search out what is to be done and lift the disagreeable burdens himself. God will bless him in so doing. He must bear his burdens in connection with the work of God according to his best judgment. He must be guarded, lest that judgment shall be influenced by the opinions of others. If it is apparent that he has made mistakes, it is his privilege to turn these failures into victories by avoiding the same in the future. He will never gain the experience necessary for his important position in being told what to do. The same is applicable to all who are standing in the different positions of trust in the various offices in Battle Creek. They are not to be coaxed and petted and helped at every turn, for this will not make men competent for important positions. It is obstacles that make men strong. It is not helps, but difficulties, conflicts, rebuffs that make men of moral sinew. Too much ease and avoiding responsibility have made weaklings and dwarfs of those who ought to be responsible men, men of moral power and strong spiritual muscle. Men who ought to be as true in every emergency as the needle to the pole have become inefficient by their efforts to shield themselves from censure and by evading responsibilities for fear of failure. Men of giant intellect are babes in discipline because they are cowardly in regard to taking and bearing the burdens they should. They are neglecting to become efficient. They have too long trusted Brother White to plan for them and to do the thinking they are highly capable of doing themselves in the interest of the cause of God. Mental deficiencies meet us at every point. Men who are content to let others plan and do their thinking for them are not fully developed. If they were left to plan for themselves, they would be found judicious, close calculating men. But when brought into connection with God's cause, it is to them entirely another thing. They lose this faculty almost altogether. They are content to remain as incompetent and inefficient as though others must do the planning and much of the thinking for them. Some men appear to be utterly unable to hew out a path for themselves. Must they ever rely upon others to do their planning and their studying, and to be mind and judgment for them? God is ashamed of such soldiers. He is not honored by their having any part to act in His work, while they are mere machines. Independent men of earnest endeavor are needed, not men as impressible as putty. Those who want a work all made ready to their hand, where they have a fixed amount to do and a fixed salary, and where they will prove an exact fit without trouble of adaptation or training, are not the men God calls to do a work in His cause. A man who cannot adapt his abilities to fill almost any place if necessity requires is not the man for this time. Men whom God will connect with His work are not to be fiberless and limp, without muscle or moral force of character. It is only by continued and persevering labor that men can be disciplined to bear a part in the work of God. These men should not become discouraged if circumstances and surroundings are the most unfavorable. They should not give up their purpose as complete failure until they are convinced beyond a doubt that they cannot do much for the honor of God and the good of souls. There are men who flatter themselves that they might do something great and good if they were only circumstanced differently, while they are making no use of the faculties they already have in working in the positions where Providence has placed them. Man can make his circumstances, but circumstances should never make the man. Man should seize circumstances as his instruments with which to work. He should master circumstances, but should never allow circumstances to master him. Individual independence and individual power is what is now needed. Individual character need not be sacrificed, but modulated, refined, elevated. I was shown that it was my husband's duty to lay off the responsibilities others would be glad to have him bear, because it excuses them from many difficulties. My husband's quick-seeing judgment and rapid discernment, which have had to become so through training and exercise, have led him to take on many burdens which others should have borne. Brother Butler is too slow. He should cultivate opposite qualities. The cause of God demands men who can see quickly and act instantaneously at the right time and with power. If Brother Butler waits to measure every difficulty and balance every perplexity he meets, he will do but little. He will have obstacles and difficulties to encounter at every turn, and he must, with firm purpose, decide to conquer them, or they will conquer him. Sometimes, various ways and purposes, different modes of operation in connection with the work of God, are about evenly balanced in the mind. But it is at this very point that the nicest discrimination is necessary. And if anything is accomplished to the purpose, it must be done at the golden moment. The slightest inclination of the weight in the balance should be seen and should determine the matter at once. Long delays tire the angels. It is even more excusable to make a wrong decision sometimes than to be in a universal wavering position, hesitating, sometimes inclined in one direction, then in the other. More misery and wretched results attend this hesitating and doubting than to sometimes move too hastily. I have been shown that the most signal victories, or the most fearful defeats, have been on the turn of minutes. God requires promptness of action. Delays, doubtings, hesitation, and indecision frequently give the enemy every advantage. Bro, Butler, you need to reform. The timing of things may tell much in favor of truth. Victories are frequently lost through delays. There will be crises in this cause. Prompt and decisive action at the right time will gain a glorious triumph, while delay and neglect will prove a great failure and positive dishonor to God. Rapid movements at the critical moment often disarm the enemy, and he is disappointed and vanquished, for he had expected time to lay plans and work by artifice. God wants men connected with his work in Battle Creek, whose judgment is at hand, whose minds, when necessary, will act like the lightning. The greatest promptness is positively necessary in the hour of peril and danger. Every plan may be well laid to accomplish certain results, and yet a delay of a very few minutes may leave things to assume entirely a different shape, and the great objects which might have been gained are lost through lack of quick foresight and prompt dispatch. Much may be done in training the mind to overcome indolence. There are times when caution and great deliberation are necessary. Rashness would be folly. But even here, much has been lost by too great hesitancy. Caution, up to a certain point, was required. But hesitancy and policy on particular occasions have been more disastrous than to have failed through rashness. Brother Butler, you need to cultivate promptness. Away with your hesitating manner. You are slow and neglect to seize the work and accomplish it. You must get out of this narrow manner of labor, for it is of the wrong order. When unbelief takes hold of your soul, your labor is of such a hesitating, halting, balancing kind that you accomplish nothing yourself and hinder others from doing. You have just enough interest to see difficulties and start doubts, but have not the interest or courage to overcome the difficulties or dispel the doubts. At such times, you need force of character, less stubbornness and set willfulness, and you need to surrender to God. This slowness, this sluggishness of action, is one of the greatest defects in your character and stands in the way of your usefulness. Your slowness of decision in connection with the cause and work of God is sometimes painful. It is not at all necessary. Prompt and decisive action may accomplish great results. You are generally willing to work when you feel just like it, ready to do when you can see clearly what is to be done. But you fail to be the benefit to the cause you might if you were prompt and decisive at the critical moment, and would overcome the hesitation and delay which have marked your character, and which have greatly retarded the work of God. This defect, unless overcome, will prove, in instances of great crises, disastrous to the cause, and fatal to your own soul. Punctuality and decisive action at the right time must be acquired, for you have not these qualities. In the warfare and battles of nations, there is often more gained by wise management in prompt action than in earnest, dead encounter with the enemy. To do up business with dispatch and yet do it thoroughly is a great acquisition. Brother Butler, you have really felt that your cautious and hesitating course was commendable, rather a virtue than a wrong. But from what the Lord has shown me in this matter, these sluggish movements on your part have greatly hindered the work of God, and left undone many things which in justice ought to have been done with promptness. It will be difficult for you now to make the changes in your character which God requires you to make, because it was difficult for you to be punctual and prompt of action in youth. When the character is formed, the habits fixed, and the mental and moral faculties have become firm, to then unlearn wrong habits, to be prompt in action, is most difficult. You should realize the value of time. You are not excusable for leaving the most important, though unpleasant, work, hoping to get rid of doing it altogether, thinking it will become less unpleasant, while you occupy your time upon pleasant matters not really taxing. You should do the work which must be done, and which involves the vital interests of the cause, first, and then take up the less important matters only after the more essential are accomplished. Punctuality and decision in the work and cause of God are highly essential. Delays are virtually defeats. Minutes are golden and should be improved to the very best account. Earthly relations and personal interests should ever be secondary. Never should the cause of God be left to suffer, in a single particular, because of earthly friends or the dearest relations. And he said unto another, Follow me. But he said, Lord, suffer me first to go and bury my father. Jesus said unto him, Let the dead bury their dead. But go thou and preach the kingdom of God. And another also said, Lord, I will follow thee, but let me first go bid them farewell which are at home in my house. And Jesus said unto him, No man having put his hand to the plow and looking back is fit for the kingdom of God. No earthly ties, no earthly considerations should weigh one moment in the scale against duty to the cause and work of God. Jesus severed his connection from everything to save a lost world. He requires of us a full and entire consecration. There are sacrifices to be made for the interests of God's cause. The sacrifice of feeling is the most keen, yet after all, it is a small sacrifice required of us. You have plenty of friends, and if the feelings are only sanctified, you need not feel that you are making a very great sacrifice. You do not leave your wife among heathen. You are not called to tread the burning African desert or to face prisons and encounter trial at every step. Be careful how you appeal to your sympathies and let human feelings and personal considerations mingle with your efforts and labors for the cause of God. He demands unselfish and willing service. You can render this and yet do all your duties to your family, but hold this as a secondary matter. My husband and myself have made mistakes in consenting to take responsibilities that others should carry. In the commencement of this work, there was needed a man to propose, to execute with determination, and to lead out, battling with error and surmounting obstacles. My husband bore the heaviest burden and met the most determined opposition. But when we became a fully organized body and several men were chosen to act in responsible positions, then was the proper time for my husband to act no longer as one man to stand under the responsibilities and carry the heavy burdens. This labor devolved on more than one. Here is where the mistake has been made by his brethren in urging him and himself in consenting to stand under the burdens and responsibilities that he had borne alone for years. He should have laid down these burdens years ago, and they should have been divided with other men chosen to act in behalf of the people. Satan would be pleased to have one man's mind and one man's judgment control the minds and judgment of those who believe the present truth. My husband has frequently been left almost alone to see and feel the wants of the cause of God and to act promptly. His leading brethren were not deficient in intellect, but they lacked a willing mind to stand in the position which my husband has occupied. They have inconsistently allowed a paralytic to bear the burdens and responsibilities of this work, which no one of them alone could endure with their strong nerves and firm muscles. He has sometimes used apparent severity. He has spoken and given offense. When he has seen others who might have shared his burdens avoiding responsibilities, it has grieved him to the heart, and he has spoken impulsively. He has not been placed in this unreasonable position by his Lord, but by his brethren. His life has been but little better than a species of slavery. The constant trial, the harassing care, the exhausting brain work have not been valued by his brethren. He has led an unenjoyed life. And he has increased his unhappiness by complaining of his brother ministers who neglected to do what they might have done. Nature has been outraged time and again. While his brethren have found fault with him for doing so much, they have not come up to take their share of the responsibility, but have been too willing to make him responsible for everything. Brother Butler came nobly up to bear responsibilities when there were no others who would lift them. If his brethren in the ministry would have cultivated a willingness to lift the burdens they should have borne, my husband would not have seen and done so much work which needed to be done, and which he thought must not be neglected. God has not suffered the life of my husband to end ingloriously. He has sustained him. But the man who performs double labor, who crowds the work of 2 years into one, is burning his candle at both ends. There is yet a work for my husband to do which he should have done years ago. He should now have less of the strife, perplexity, and responsibility of life, and be ripening, softening, and elevating for his last change. He should now husband his strength. He should not allow the responsibilities of the cause to rest upon him so heavily, but should stand free, where the prejudices and suspicions of his brethren would not disturb his peace. God has permitted the precious light of truth to shine upon his word and illuminate the mind of my husband. He may reflect the rays of light from the presence of Jesus upon others by his preaching and writing. But while serving tables, doing business matters in connection with the cause, he has been deprived to a great degree of the privilege of using his pen and of preaching to the people. He has felt that he was called of God to stand in defense of the truth, and those who were not doing justice to the work, he has felt it his duty to reprove, and that sometimes severely. The pressure of care and the affliction of disease have often thrown him into discouragements, and he has sometimes viewed matters in an exaggerated light. His brethren have taken advantage of his words and of his prompt manners, which have been in such marked contrast with their tardiness of labor and their narrow plans of operation. They have accredited to my husband motives and feelings which were not due him. The wide contrast between themselves and him seemed like a gulf. But this might easily have been bridged had these men of intellect put their undivided interests and whole hearts into the work of building up the important institutions in Battle Creek. We might exert and hold a constant influence in this place, at the head of the work, which would advance the prosperity of these institutions. But the course of others who do not do what they might, who are subject to temptation, if their track is crossed, and who would reflect upon our most earnest efforts for the prosperity of God's cause, compels us to seek an asylum elsewhere, where we may work to better advantage with less danger of being crushed under burdens. God has given us great freedom and power with his people at Battle Creek. When we came to this place last summer, our work commenced in earnest, and it has continued ever since. One perplexity and difficulty has followed closely upon another, calling forth taxing labor to set things right. When the Lord showed that Brother Abby might be the man for the place if he remained humble and would rely upon his strength, God did not make a blunder and select the wrong man. For a time, Brother Abby had a true interest and acted as a father at the Health Institute. But he became self-exalted, self-sufficient. He pursued a wrong course. He yielded to temptation. His course toward Brother Kellogg was decidedly wrong. The course of the physicians toward Brother Kellogg was wrong. They showed a narrow mind, an envious, jealous spirit, especially Dr. Ginley. Doctors and superintendent united together to close every opening for him at the Institute. They drove him to discouragement and desperation. The wrong course pursued toward him by others was reacted upon us after Brother Kellogg fell under temptation. The movements of this character made at the Institute about that time were such as need to be repented of. Brother Abby made his influence and power felt. He knew that Dr. Kellogg understood his grievous fault under temptation, and he was fully set that he should not find a place in that institute. The course Dr. Ginley pursued toward John Kellogg was displeasing to God. Dr. Ginley does not know what spirit he is of. He gets excited, loses his balance, and pursues a narrow, bigoted, conceited course. God has noted the words spoken, the deportment and acts toward Brother Merritt and John Kellogg. These contemptible actions, caused by jealous surmisings and carried out in an uncourteous, unbrotherly spirit, have passed into eternity with their burden of record. Previous to this, Brother Abbey had been overcome by Satan's devices. But from that time, he has been growing weaker in moral power. We tried to save him because God had shown that he was the man for the place. We used our influence to have him stand at his post at the Health Institute and redeem the failure of his previous course. We followed Brother Abbey with letters of warning, letters of counsel, and reproof. We had taken up his case and would not suffer the men of narrow minds who were in danger of going to extremes to press him severely and to have close connection with Brother Abbey to be a spy upon his movements and thus discourage him. We sought to give him every encouragement. But after we were far away and could not see or know the course of Brother Abbey, he fell under the stronger temptations of Satan. He became independent, self-sufficient, and lost sight of the glory of God. He abused our confidence and proved too true these suspicions and surmisings from those who had distrusted his integrity and moral principles.
Bro, Abbey did not listen to the directors. He moved according to his own judgment, took things in his own hands, and felt competent to judge of matters himself. He was not right with God, and God left him to expose his weakness and his folly. But I saw that God holds the directors responsible for the course of Brother Abbey. Had they pursued a faithful, straightforward course, they would not only have cleared their own souls, but prevented Brother Abbey from being unfaithful. These brethren are inexcusable. Their neglect of duty has been placed upon record by the angel and has passed into eternity. The Health Institute has been under a very dark cloud. The spirit that pervades the hearts of the physicians needs to be transformed before God will be pleased to abide with them. Oh, what a change needs to be wrought there. Brother Harmon Lindsay was acquainted with the spirit which Brother Abbey possessed, but he was blinded. He seemed infatuated. He chose his company, and these two were apparently of one heart. One sustained the other. God's holy angels were grieved. Harmon was nearly ruined. God, in his mercy, permitted sickness to come upon him, which had some influence to arrest his course. But Brother Lindsay has not squared himself. He has not come out clear and free from all the wrong influence he had been under. His feelings were wrong. His heart was not right with God. Unless he surrenders his unbelief and presses his way to the light, he will most assuredly lose heaven. He needs to be alarmed. He needs a new conversion. The excuses the directors have made for their neglect of duty are all wrong. Their shifting responsibilities upon Brother and Sister White is marked against them. They simply neglected their duty because it was unpleasant. Brother Butler was unfaithful here. He neglected the work of setting things in order because it was disagreeable. Brother Butler and the directors are guilty of gross neglect of duty. These directors should feel a deep anxiety to try the matter over again and redeem, as far as possible, their unfaithful work. God does not hold Brother and Sister White responsible for these things. When those in office accepted their position, they virtually pledged themselves to become responsible for the prosperity of the Health Institute. The positions our brethren have taken since my husband's return to Michigan in excusing their neglect and in being highly sensitive in their feelings, have made retreat on our part a necessity. I saw that should we remain here, with the existing views and feelings of our brethren, our way would be hedged up, our usefulness crippled, and our health and spirits sacrificed. The very help that we can give the church and these institutions are greatly needed. I saw that help was needed upon the Pacific coast. But God would not have us take the responsibilities or bear other perplexities. We may stand as counselors, may help them with our influence and with our judgment. We may do much if we will not be induced to get under the load and bear the weight which others should bear, and which it is important for them to bear in order to gain a necessary experience. We have important matter to write out, which the people greatly need. We have precious light on Bible truth, which we may speak to the people. I was shown that God did not design that my husband should bear the burdens he has borne for the last 5 months. The working part in connection with the cause has been left to fall upon him. This has brought perplexity, weariness, and nervous debility, which has resulted in discouragement and depression. There has been a lack of harmonious action on the part of his brethren from the commencement of the cause. Brothers Andrews and Wagoner have loved freedom. They have not lifted the responsibilities which they might, and have failed to gain the experience they might have had to stand in most responsible positions relative to the vital interests of the cause of God at the present time. They have excused their neglect of bearing responsibilities because they feared being reflected upon afterward. Brother Andrews has failed in many respects, but the greatest sin in him was in professing to coincide when in heart he was at variance. He was afraid of blame and, to avoid unpleasant feelings, cowardly professed a union he did not feel, and coincided in opinions advanced by my husband, which he did not in his heart believe. This made him weak. It displeased God and separated him from his favor. He had a dread of blame which led him into sin. The religion we profess is colored by our natural dispositions and temperaments. Therefore, it is of the highest importance that the weak points in our character become strengthened by exercise, and the strong, unfavorable points be weakened by working in an opposite direction, and by strengthening opposite qualities. But his brethren have not done what they might and should have done, which would have given my husband sufficient encouragement and help to continue to bear some responsibilities at the head of the work. His fellow laborers did not move independently and look to God for light and for duty for themselves, and follow in his opening providence, and consult together upon plans of operations, and unite in their plans and manner of labor. Brethren Wagoner and Andrews were too willing to submit their judgment and take the judgment of my husband, and yet they did not feel the importance of perfect union of action. They were not obliged to give up their judgment, but this would be attended with the least perplexity. My husband erred in dwelling too much upon the mistakes of these brethren. It discouraged them and deprived him of the help they might have given him. He let his own feelings control him, and he lost the favor of God and did not reform his brethren. As they saw the mind of my husband so greatly disturbed, they felt that he was not right and excused themselves, in being discouraged, from making efforts to do even what they had previously done. This was wrong in them and displeased God. Since coming to Michigan last summer, the Lord has especially blessed the labors of my husband. He has been sustained in a most remarkable manner to do work that so much needed to be done. Had Brother Haskell and Butler been awake to see and understand the wants of the cause of God at our last Michigan camp meeting, the many things not done might have been done. There was a lack to meet the wants of the occasion. Had Brother Butler stood cheerful in God, walking in the light, ready to see what was to be done, and executing the work with dispatch, we should now be months advanced, and long ago we might have been freed from B.C., and working to the point to establish the work upon the Pacific coast. God cannot be glorified by our falling into singular gloom and then remaining under the cloud. The light does shine, although we may not realize its blessing. But if we make all diligence to press to the light, and if we move ahead just as though the light did shine, we shall soon pass out of the darkness and find light, light all around us. At our last camp meeting, the angels of God in a special manner came with their power to lighten and heal, and to bless both my husband and Brother Wagoner. A precious victory was there gained which should never lose its influence. God would teach my husband in that demonstration that he can be a blessing to Brother Wagoner, and would also teach Brother Wagoner that he can be a blessing to my husband. The hearts of these two men had long been estranged, but the great healer was at work with the power of his grace to unite their hearts and bind in cords of love and tenderness these two fellow laborers. He would make their hearts one. He would have this union which angels had formed remain unbroken. There will always be something to meet which will call forth charity and forbearance for one another. But the Spirit of God would be grieved if these hearts should be alienated. They should be as true to each other as the compass to the pole. Angels of God cemented the hearts of Brothers Andrews, Smith, White, and Wagoner. True brotherly love and Christian fellowship should exist with these men of God, all acting a part in the great closing up work for these last days. I was shown that God, in a most marked manner, had given my husband tokens of his love and care, and also of his sustaining grace. This should ever lead to humility and gratitude on the part of my husband. God has regarded his zeal and devotion to his cause and his work. I was shown that God, in great mercy, had given Brother Butler a part to act in connection with his cause and work. Your naturally unbelieving mind has been in a great measure transformed by your accepting the truth and cultivating qualities opposite those of unbelief, questioning, and doubt. God has, in a special manner, helped your infirmities, and yet there are deficiencies in your character which need to be corrected, or you will, through these, mar the work of God and do injury to his cause.
Brother Butler, you have done well as far as you have cultivated the opposite character to unbelief and doubt, but you still have a greater work to do in this direction. Satan is well acquainted with your weakness on these points, and sometimes, when important decisions are to be made and important interests are at stake, he puts his coloring upon matters and things. All is shaded with unbelief, and a pall of darkness and gloom is spread over everything. This shades your religious experience and is a serious difficulty, for at the very time when your powers are required to be the most vigorous, your discrimination the most clear and acute, all is molded by the influence upon your own mind. This is not explainable even to yourself, but it is that which controls you altogether too much. Notwithstanding you make some effort to resist it, you are in great danger of making shipwreck upon this very point. You do not naturally take things in at a glance, and you are too slow to see and act upon a point. In this you lose much to the cause that might be gained. This is a natural defect which the grace of God can help you to remedy. But you need to see your own danger upon this point and work in an opposite direction. When in a dilemma, you frequently remain too long waiting to see your way clear to your own mind, and much is lost to the cause which might be gained if this defect was remedied in your character. When you become discouraged, or when your track is crossed, you too frequently settle back in a position that costs you the least exertion, to do nothing. Satan then comes in, and your peculiar traits of character are prominent. You question almost every proposition, throw doubt over nearly every suggestion, criticize everything, and are a perfect clog to all that you are connected with. If it is as you think,
impossible for you to change this phase in your character, your best course would be to remove yourself for the time being entirely from the cause of God and leave the course of others unobstructed from your defects of character. You grow stubborn, self-willed, and obstinate by holding yourself under a cloud and casting your disagreeable, dismal gloom upon all connected with you. Self-will and stubbornness are indulged to the sacrifice of the highest interests, and you are meanwhile excusing yourself that you cannot help it, that you have no power to rise above this deplorable evil. If you have not power of yourself to overcome, Christ has made provisions for you through His name. You should not consider your Christian experience correct unless you can be well balanced in all these directions where now you are so defective. God wants you to die to self, to subdue your will and control your stubborn disposition. It is congenial to your feelings at times to settle into a contrary, unamiable state of mind when you feel just like it, and too many times have you done this, and the result has been more fearful than you have calculated upon or imagined. You are not a fully converted man till this evil is overcome, and you are in a position to be depended upon in any emergency. God wants minute men. He will have men who are as true when important decisions are to be made as the needle to the pole. Men whose special and personal interests are swallowed up in the one great general interest for the salvation of souls, as were our Savior's. Satan plays upon the organ of the mind where any chance has been left for him to do so, and he seizes upon the very time and place where he can do the most service to himself and the greatest injury to the cause of God. A neglect to do what we might do, and that which God requires we should do in His cause, is a sin which cannot be palliated with excuse of circumstances or conditions. For Jesus has made provision for all in every emergency. Brother Butler, in doing the work of God, you will be placed in a variety of circumstances, all requiring self-possession and self-command that will qualify you to adapt yourself to circumstances and the peculiarities of the situation. Then can you act yourself unembarrassed. You should not place too low an estimate upon your ability to act your part in the various callings of practical life. Where you are aware of deficiencies, go to work at once to remedy these defects. Do not trust to others to supply your deficiencies, and you go on indifferently, as though it were a matter of course that your peculiar organization must ever remain so. Apply yourself earnestly to cure these defects, that you may be perfect in Christ Jesus, wanting in nothing. If you form too high an opinion of yourself, you will think your labors are of more real consequence than they will bear, and you will plead individual independence which borders on arrogance. If you go to the other extreme and form too low an opinion of yourself, you will feel inferior and leave an impression of inferiority which will greatly limit the influence you might have for good. You should avoid either extreme. Feeling should not control you. Circumstances should not affect you. You may form a correct estimate of yourself, which will prove a safeguard from both extremes. You may be dignified without vain self-confidence. You may be condescending and yielding without sacrificing self-respect or individual independence, and your life may be of great influence with those in the higher as well as the lower walks of life. Brother Butler has had some help from his wife, but too often her influence, her words, and her actions have been a heavy weight, an additional burden. She has a warped character, a rough, jagged organization, highly sensitive and extremely nervous, conscientious and severely critical, which has made her a burden rather than a help. Her life has not been without some living spots. Her works have been good in some directions, but she has gathered burdens and responsibilities upon herself to mold the consciences of others to her extreme ideas, which have seemed to her essential. Sister Butler has been in great blindness of mind, which has led her to see matters all wrong. Her feelings have been wrong. She has not viewed my husband in the correct light.
She has had much to say to her husband, which brought no freedom or light, but only darkness. His best course would have been not to engage in controversy, and seek to have her understand God had not laid special burdens upon her, and she was not to afflict her soul over others' supposed wrongs. Sister Butler has a strong imagination, and has kept before her the supposed inconsistencies in the Christian character of others, and has felt so great a burden that she has lost the correct knowledge of herself. God has not laid upon Sister Butler the burdens she has carried. It is her particular organization to imagine the worst and groan under supposed terrible evils. God can take care of his own work. The enemy has magnified before her mind the wrongs of men in responsible positions. Especially in the case of my husband, Sister Butler has taken these things to heart as though she were responsible for his errors. She has brought upon herself many times a perfect frenzy over things which existed only in a highly excited imagination. She has talked much. Precious, golden time has been exhausted in needless conversation, especially with her husband, in regard to those things connected with the cause which seemed to her all wrong. She has imagined that everything was to be wrecked in consequence of the wrongs of my husband. The enemy colored matters before her imagination to suit his own purposes. Sister Butler has had a great many unnecessary fears, and carried a great many needless burdens, and afflicted her soul over many things without cause. For this she will gain no reward, but there will be loss, not only to herself, but to others. Sister Butler has been watching and condemning the course of my husband for that which she deems undue severity or censure, while she has been doing the very thing she stands braced to condemn in him. Sister Butler should leave others to the performance of their individual duties and to bear their responsibilities and maintain all that independence she claims for herself. She should be on her guard to shun both the fire of fanaticism and the coldness of formality. She has all the work she can possibly do to avoid extremes, to guard her tongue and control her spirit, and leave the important interests of the cause with the Lord. She should be softening, elevating, and sweetening her spirit for the final touch of immortality. She should be careful that while she is watching and criticizing the course of others, she does not cultivate a bitter, censorious, stormy spirit which disgusts the heavenly angels. She should cultivate modest and retiring virtues, which are the valuable ornaments to women. A talking, excitable woman may be excusable among those acquainted with the true goodness of her heart and her virtues, but among strangers who are unacquainted with her life, history, and religious character, incalculable harm may be done. An unguarded, excitable, talking woman whose element in controversy and criticism upon the character of others will set the leaven of jealousy at work, which will affect entire churches. Sister Butler needs to calm down and lay off the burdens she has lifted in behalf of others. She should encourage a happy, confiding trust in God and be hopeful and cheerful. Then she may have health. Then she can help her husband. She should cherish that love which suffereth long and is kind and is quiet and inobtrusive in its influence. She needs to cultivate the true dignity of Christian independence, which holds fast the form of sound words. If Sister Butler could have a true photograph of her life influence presented before her, with her many words and her excitable spirit, she would find that an important work was before her that she has not dreamed of. She has had a great influence upon the mind and pen of Brother Butler. Sister Butler has intelligence and experience which are of great value if she will use them correctly. But she needs a well-balanced mind and a controlled imagination. She should banish from her heart suspicion and evil surmisings, and cherish an even temper, which is amiable and praiseworthy. The true spirit of Christianity is needed to influence and control the life and character,
purifying the heart, softening, elevating, and refining the affections and propensities. Then true Christian politeness will give her access anywhere. She needs the inward adorning, the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God of great price. Ransom was shown me as standing before the people, uttering words of condemnation and bitterness against the church, very unbecoming, which brought the frown of God upon him and all who gave sanction to him. Was Ransom without sin? Was he a criterion for others? Was he a pattern of Christian propriety? While he was hurling out his invectives against the people of God, you and Brother Abbey and Brother Ings were in unison with him. You did not see impropriety in this course. You could sit and exult in spirit. The hearers were disgusted, and the angels of God were disgusted. Such extremes always bring reaction. Ransom had not the Spirit of God. Brother Abbey had not the Spirit of God. They moved in their own spirit. They were jealous to bring the church into a close place and to humble them. God was not at all in this work. It began and ended in self. So great a pressure was brought upon the church, they became confused and bewildered. At this time, they needed help. Brother Butler came, and reports were made to him in regard to the state of individuals and the church, which he unfortunately received. He did not discern the Spirit. He united his influence with that of Brother Lockwood. Many thought that if Brother Lockwood was wrong, Brother Butler would not vindicate his course and press the burdens upon the church closer, which they had felt they were unable to bear. Confessions were made by many to Brother Lockwood, especially by the children, which never should have been made. Brother Lockwood has ever inclined to be too exacting with others, especially with the young. He has not cultivated a spirit of tenderness, pity, and brotherly kindness, tempering his words that they should not repulse but win. Brother Lockwood, as he notices errors and wrongs, has a zeal to set the erring right, and he reproves when it only makes matters worse. Brother Lockwood may take a course to be loved rather than disliked. Our Savior enjoined upon Peter to prove his love by caring for the lambs. This was the discipline Peter needed. His stern, exacting nature needed the softening influence of love for children, coming down from the position of a stern judge to meet their young minds. Brother Lockwood, you need the element of love. Praise where you can, and censure as little as possible. For censure and dictation is more congenial to your temper than love. Love begets love. Tender, courteous manners beget the same with those with whom we associate.
Brother Butler, here is an instance where the reports of relatives and their statements affected your judgment and controlled your opinions. You received surmisings and reports from those who were wrong themselves, and you reported these things to us, which threw an unnecessary burden upon us. The Lord gave me an impressive dream, which I sent back from California to Battle Creek, and which arrested the high-toned feelings and stayed the excitement. The peculiar temperament of your wife is to see some terrible things and to surmise great evils. She feels that she has uncommon discernment to detect wrong, which has had an influence upon your life and affected your labors in connection with the cause of God. A grievous wrong was done the church, and that which made this matter the more aggravating was that Brother and Sister White were made responsible for these sad errors when they were at a great distance from the scene of confusion. The church was made to believe that these fanatical demonstrations, these narrow, radical sentiments which were bound upon the church, were sanctioned by Brother and Sister White. Then, in that time of confusion, perplexity, and darkness, the church needed the true light to shine among them. Then the voice of the true watchman was needed to give the certain sound. There, Brother Butler, you completely failed.
You filed in on the side of those who were deceived in themselves, and who were deceived in reference to their duty to the church. All that narrow-minded bigotry, jealous watching, the overbearing dictatorial spirit, and the arbitrary power which was exercised should have been most firmly and sternly rebuked. You were the man who should have discerned and corrected these mistakes which affected the vital interests of the people of God. But you failed utterly. You listened to reports. You were influenced by the testimony of friends and relatives, and you gave your influence in their favor. This was a grievous wrong. The dress question was made the burden of religious experience and the test of Christian character. Testimonies which God had given to meet certain wrongs were brought in to sustain and give force to the fanatical movements of Ransom and others. There, the light God had given was put to a wrong use. It was abused. Since this interpretation of the testimonies to meet radical minds and sustain the overbearing tyranny of those who profess to be especially led of God, I have no burden upon dress reform. The dress question shall never more be advocated by me until it can be treated fairly and consistently. I will never furnish ill-balanced, narrow minds with arguments or evidence to make a raid upon others. There is a class who seem to be incapable of handling such subjects as the dress question with discretion. They make tests of privileges and carry the reforms so unwisely that they do incalculable injury to the cause of God. The dress question is carried beyond the purpose or design of God. This class convert that which God allowed as a blessing into a curse. God does not leave his people to the judgment of such unbalanced minds. These excitable elements, liable to extremes, have not breadth of mind or depth of judgment. Their minds are formed to run in one groove, and when forced from their accustomed groove, seem to be nowhere and unfitted for anything. This fanatical work has passed into eternity with its burden of results. It can never be taken back, never be undone. Here, Brother Butler, is your danger of being affected by the influence of your relatives. They view matters in a certain light and give you the benefit of their views and experience. And before you are aware of it, you are incorporating these views and feelings with your own, and you move and act in reference to the impression made upon your mind. Random talk, which runs into excitement, has done a bad work. It is always bad. It has unbalanced the mind of Sister Butler and made her at times little less than an insane woman. Precious probationary time is fast passing and can never be recalled. This time is given to prepare for eternity. Vain and needless talk must be restrained and overcome. Sister Butler, your much talk has had its influence upon your husband. He has too often incorporated your suggestions, your fears, and your criticisms into his articles and sermons. My sister, you are not required to be as silent as some women. Talking is your safety valve. But sometimes you talk yourself into an excitement which is detrimental to you and positively injurious to others. You have endured much imaginary suffering that had no real existence only in the mind. But this made your suffering nonetheless acute. You deserve sympathy, while at the same time, you could do very much to place yourself in more favorable conditions.
I was shown that Brother Butler was too much affected by the opinions of others, especially when such opinions suggest rigid requirements of others. I was pointed back to the condition of things existing in Battle Creek 2 years ago. The enemy came in and worked with the minds of Brother and Sister Lockwood, Brother Ings, and Brother Abbey. Brother Butler did not discern the extreme course they were pursuing. He did not at that time take a correct stand and work to the right point. Brother Lockwood, Abbey, Ings, and several others carried matters to extremes. Had you, at that time, Brother Butler, had that close connection with the Spirit of God you might have had, you would not have been swept in with this strong, fanatical spirit. Like a true watchman, you would have taken your stand firmly against all such rash,
bigoted, disgraceful exhibitions of human weakness and fanatical errors. Brother Butler, your danger now is of being affected with reports. Your labors are decidedly practical, close, and cutting. You rein up the people to very close tests and requirements. This is necessary at times, but your labors are getting to be too much of this character and will lose their force unless mingled with more of the softening, encouraging grace of the Spirit of God. You allow the words of Brother and Sister Lockwood and others of your relatives and special friends to influence your propositions and affect your decisions. You credit too readily and incorporate their views into your own ideas and are too often led astray. You need to be guarded. The families in so closely related have had an influence. Your judgment, your feelings, your views influence them, and in turn, they influence you, and a strong current will be set flowing in a wrong direction unless you are all thoroughly consecrated and humble before God. All the elements of these family connections are naturally independent, conscientious, and inclined to extremes, unless especially balanced and controlled by the Spirit of God. I was shown in the case of Brother Carlstead that he was a conscientious Christian. But Brother Butler had received impressions through reports, some of which had no real foundation in truth, which led him to watch and to criticize the course of Brother Carlstead, and to arouse distrust and suspicion in our minds. Brother Carlstead had but a short experience, and he was only responsible for the light he had. He walked in the light to his best knowledge. Cruel surmisings were turned against him, which cast suspicion upon all his efforts. The mistakes of his life before he embraced the truth excited, with some, strong prejudice against him. The course we pursued toward this brother was not the best. Our confidence in the suggestions of Brother Butler led us astray. It grieved Brother Carlstead to the heart and added to his affliction of body and embittered the last days of his life. Especially has the course of Brother Lee been censurable. He found fault, criticized, and made the course of Brother Carlstead very hard when, had he possessed the right spirit, a spirit of brotherly love and kind courtesy for one of his own countrymen, he might have helped him. But envy and jealousy closed the heart of Brother Lee. He could have cooperated with Brother C if he had chosen to do so. But his spirit was not right. He did not want to help our brother, but to discourage him in his efforts. Brother Lee will not be able to do as well as Brother Carlstead, whom he censured. He must feel his wrong in this matter and exercise true repentance toward God. Never, never be influenced by reports. Never let your conduct be influenced by the nearest and dearest relatives. Keep the secrets in connection with the cause of God, even from the wife of your bosom. She need not become acquainted with your movements, for it would too frequently make subject matter for argument and unreasonable feelings. The time has come when the greatest wisdom needs to be exercised in reference to the cause and work of God. Judgment is needed to know when to speak and when to keep silent. Hunger for sympathy frequently leads to imprudence of a grave character in opening the feelings to others. Your appearance claims sympathy frequently when it were better for you if you did not receive it.